Welcome. It gives me very great pleasure to welcome Alex Azarov and Paolo Belena Caradawa to this public conversation on climate change and peace building. Alex has been with Conciliation Resources since May 2021 and is its lead on climate change and conflict work in Fiji, Solomon Islands, and Papua New Guinea. Previously, Alex worked in Ukraine from the end of 2014 with various international and local NGOs supporting dialogue initiatives and a professional community of facilitators and mediators. Alex's interests include nonviolent communication, masculinities, and the use of participatory theater in peacebuilding. He has a master's of mediation and conflict resolution degree from the University of Queensland and is a professional mediator. Paolo, welcome, is the director of programs and co-founder of Transcend Oceania, a Just Peace and Development regional NGO based in Fiji. Previously served as a peacebuilding specialist in various peacebuilding and development organizations. He's worked as an independent peacebuilding consultant across the Pacific, providing peace and conflict training, technical support and mentoring, and group process facilitation. He leads Transcend Oceania's integrated peacebuilding approach to deal with climate change conflicts in communities affected by climate change using dialogue, mediation, and trauma healing. Paolo holds an MA in conflict transformation and peacebuilding from Eastern Mennonite University in the USA. So welcome to both of you. To get us started, let me ask you both a bit more about your organizations, Transcend Oceania and Conciliation Resources.
So, Bula Vanaka, this is Paolo. I currently serve as the director of programs for this NGO, a Just Peace and Development NGO that's based in Fiji, but work around the Pacific with some of our programs. As a peace building organization, we are interested in situations of conflict, of violence and its impact and injustices. And therefore, provide programs, different types of programs in these areas in Fiji and the Pacific. We are a relatively young organization, and this year we will be 10 years old. But that's us as an organization, Transcend Oceania.
Alex.
Thank you, Paolo. Good morning, everyone. So I'm Alex Azarov. A little bit about Conciliation Resources. I'm the program manager for the Fiji and Solomon Islands program at Conciliation Resources and focusing on climate change, as you mentioned. Our organization is actually based in London. That's where the headquarters is. And we have a regional office in Melbourne. But Conciliation Resources actually started in Fiji in the late 90s. And the idea at the beginning was to help people in contexts where there are conflicts or post-conflict issues, help them to better understand the drivers of the conflicts and the ways that those drivers could be transformed to reach positive peace. So a lot of what we do as an organization is help people with conflict analysis. So understanding who is involved, what are the different issues, what are the different relationships, and then trying to understand where there could be peace-building approaches to help transform this system, this complex system. And part of also what we support with is comparative learning, so bringing people from different parts of the world together where they have similar challenges and they may be able to exchange their experiences, approaches, lessons learned, and also it helps with solidarity and a feeling that, you're not the only one dealing with such problems. Other people around the world are also facing them and to get some support from colleagues around the world. So that's what we do. And we work primarily with partnerships with local organizations because we understand that people in the context know the context much better. They have the relationships, they have the cultural knowledge, the contextual knowledge. So we come in with that in mind, that our role is really one of accompaniment and support. And that's why we're really grateful to have Transcend Oceania as a partner in Fiji for many, many years now.
One the specific area that I think we are specialized in as a peace building organization here in Fiji and in the Pacific is contextualizing all these Western ideologies, theories, and all that to make it more more meaningful for our people in the Pacific. So because we are indigenous people who work for this organization, we bring in that our culture, the values that we have, our belief systems and all that into the peace building space. And we ensure that the people in the Pacific understand all this and how they can do peace building in their communities using their own narratives, their own understanding, and their own Pacific theories about peace and conflict.
Good. Thanks for that clarification, Paolo.
Thank you. Thank you, Paolo. Thank you, Alex. So this is Volker Böge. I work with the Toda Peace Institute in this work stream of climate change, conflict, and peace. And so I'm wondering, so both your organizations are peace-building organizations and organizations doing conflict analysis. How come that you also decided to work on issues of climate change?
Toda Institute first international conference that was held in Auckland, New Zealand, some years ago. And that's the whole beginning of this journey that we've taken together in the work around climate change and conflict, or the peace building work in the climate change space here in Fiji, and now reaching out into the Pacific.
Yeah. And we were very lucky to have the support from the New Zealand International Development Cooperation Program, a multi-year program. And at the end of 2019, thanks to this TOTA conference, we managed to secure a multi-year partnership with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade. And that's been going ever since. And the reason why I think we chose to work on climate change is that there's been a lot of focus on sort of the technical solutions and the physical impacts of climate change, but we haven't seen so much looking at the social impacts of climate change. So when we designed the program, and I think as a result of the conference, we wanted to look at how is climate change affecting communities socially, and what is the potential connection to conflict? How is it exacerbating existing tensions? And how can we, through our work, how can we support communities and all the other stakeholders and government to manage these social pressures that climate change is exacerbating? And so I think we've learned a lot over these years, and we'll be happy to talk more about it.
Great. And in terms of working together, it's nice to see civil society organizations kind of coming together like that. I mean, what's your particular division of labor between CR and Transcend Oceania? I mean, how do you complement each other, and what are the different strengths that you bring to the partnership?
Thanks for that question. Yeah, so I think as an international organization, CR has some experience over these years understanding this funding environment with different donors, different funding opportunities, having the relationships with various ministries, posts. So because of that, we help partners in contexts where we work to become more familiar with that space, to be able to access that funding. So we work together on fundraising at the beginning of funding cycles. And once we put together proposals and once we secure funding, CR then supports partners with that whole kind of burden of implementing a program. So from the financial management, project management, but also organizational development. So looking at what policies an organization has. And one thing that I'd wanted to highlight is that there's been a lot of focus on capacity building in the past, and we feel that that's not really the best way to look at this in terms of our partnership, because we are equal organizations. We have different sort of strengths and weaknesses, and it's not fair to kind of think that an international organization like CR has all the capacity and then our partners don't, and we help with capacity building. I think we're looking at it more as a joint learning process, where when we have meetings and workshops, that we're learning from each other. And as much as we're helping our partners to develop their organizational capacity, they're helping us to develop our own. And also to give feedback to donors about how things really work in contexts, or don't work. You know, so for example, some of these financial reporting requirements can be very onerous. And so we try to give feedback on how to improve that system. So that's a little bit about our partnership. And we also, as I said, we support with analysis, with bringing people together. But when we are working in the context, we're really just guided by our partners, and we support them to lead the way.
Mm. So can I just say again that our focus in climate change is on the conflicts that arise out of the impacts of climate change, which we believe there's not a lot of focus around the conflicts that are created, or the conflicts and tensions that are exacerbated by the impacts of climate change. And so that's our interest in the climate change space. And we work well together with Conciliation Resources on that. And so our role as a local NGO and partner is to actually roll the programs out on the ground in the communities that we are working in currently that are impacted by climate change. And so we work with those communities up in the Northern Division. Very recently, we have also engaged other communities within the Central Division through what we call the Community Advocates Program, which is a new program where we're bringing in other communities that are in the priority list for relocation, for state relocation here in Fiji. So we've expanded a little bit to bring those communities in our program to be able to understand the types of conflicts that they face, and to help the community through capacity building on how to deal with those conflicts in ways that are nonviolent, in ways that are more meaningful for communities that are affected by climate change.
And just as a sort of a final question in this section, how do you actually jointly design the process? I think that would be interesting to know.
Yeah, look, this is a really important question, I think, because in this field, it's quite common to have very short timeframes when it comes to funding opportunities, when you have opportunities coming up, and quite focused requirements for what you could apply for. And so what ends up happening, I think, is that international organizations can be kind of forced to put projects, programs together without much consultation, or with limited understanding or knowledge of what's needed. And then it becomes a sort of search for implementers. So to go and look for local organizations to offer them some kind of partnership and work, but the projects are already there. They've been approved and accepted. And I think this is really backwards. I think what we try to do is to have this sort of continuing analysis and understanding of the current context, of the emerging needs, the current needs, and then talk about it, come up with ideas. We're led by our partners when they say, look, this is something that we want to focus on. And out of that come ideas for projects, come ideas for programs. And then we can, over time, we can discuss this and come up with a program, for example. And then if we're lucky, then an opportunity might arise, a funding opportunity that we can then link to these ideas that have developed. And I think that's how it really should work. But that's the reality that we're in. Look, I personally have found that it's often a lack of time and an opportunity to actually come and talk in person and have that time to have these discussions. Because project ideas and program ideas, they're not going to happen suddenly. It's something that takes time and discussions. And I'm very, very lucky to have this opportunity to be here today in Suva to join Paolo. And just maybe to illustrate that this is probably the better way of working, is that when you can go and meet together and spend the time. And here in Fiji, it's often over a bowl of kava. And that's a very good way to design activities and projects together.
Yeah. In addition, we as partners, we have very regular monitoring, evaluation, and learning sessions. So during those times, we try to do outcomes harvesting, where we talk about what has happened and what are the outcomes and the impacts of the activities that we've done in the community on the people and their communities in their context, and then share that as a way to learn and to help us prepare for other oncoming or future programs and activities. And so we do that very often. And it's usually it is very helpful for us in terms of planning and looking ahead at what we think needs to be done in with the people in the communities. And again, our role as the local partner is to always consult with the with Conciliation Resources, our international partner, on what are the practical, appropriate cultural ways that will make our engagement with the community more meaningful, where we try to do less harm in the community with our programs, but whatever we do, the people can take ownership of the work that we do with them in the community, because we know that to be able to sustain that, they need to know that this is us, this is our work within this context, through the different ways that we know, we understand, we are more comfortable with because of the cultural appropriate ways in dealing with these conflicts that come out of the impacts of climate change.
And just one small thing to add on our partnership on this question. We support our partners with strategic planning. So once a year, you have these sessions coming together, reflecting on the work, thinking about the future. And that's a good way also to come up with ideas for how to develop the work. So we've done that in the past.
Yeah, and we've done online meetings with this, but we also have done in the past face-to-face, so we actually come together. So our friends from Australia actually come over to Fiji and they join us within that in those planning sessions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paolo and Alex. And it will be interesting to learn more about some practical examples of how you really engage with the communities. You already have said that your focus is definitely on the community level. And as I understand it, you have developed an adaptive peace-building methodology for engaging with the communities, this Just Peace Vanua engagement methodology. Maybe you can a bit elaborate on that and then give some examples of your work in the communities.
Thank you. So when we started our work in the initial three communities impacted by climate change in the Northern Division, which are Vunindongoloa. Vunindongoloa is the first fully state-led relocated community here in Fiji in 2014. And the other community is Vuni Savi Savi, who are not thinking about relocation at this point. They've decided to stay on because of a traditional role they play about a sacred ground, a sacred site that they are there to protect. And the third one is Nabiavia, which is a community composed of descendants of the Solomon Islanders who were blackbirded into Fiji during the colonial days, and they live on that land as settlers and are also facing the impacts of climate change. So when we, this work in these communities was actually an extension of our partnership with the Pacific Conference of Churches. And so they were going in to begin to help people understand climate change and its impact from a spiritual, theological perspective. And they found out that there was a lot of conflicts that happened in these communities that they themselves, because they didn't have the resources and the skills to deal with those conflicts as an organization, they then invited us to work with them and focus on the conflicts that are either exacerbated or new conflicts arising out of the impacts of climate change. And when we started at Vuni Savi Savi, one of the communities, we went in and did what we know is appropriate to do when we engage with the community, and that is to do the sevu-sevu, which is the first part of the process that's described in the Just Peace Vanua methodology. The sevu-sevu is basically your request to the Vanua that you engage with the people of the Vanua. And that's done in a ritual that we call the sevu-sevu. And so we went in and did that sevu-sevu. And usually it will last about 10 minutes, the ritual itself. But because we were moving into a new space, we were moving into a new context, we were going to be engaging with people that we've never known before, but were interested in helping them engage as active peace builders within the climate change space. We sat down and continued that day with the Talanoa as sort of our way to actually begin to understand them and their situation. So the whole thing happened almost the whole day, lasting into the evening. And then just before we left, the chief of the village of Vuni Savi Savi actually told us, you know, you're the first group that has come here. There's hundreds of people from development workers, from government, from CSOs, from churches that have come here, but they don't do what you do. And what you've done within this day up until now is a sign of your respect for us and our Vanua and the things that have happened in our Vanua. And he said this: when people come, they come and ask us many questions, and then they take all that information and they go, and they never return. They never come back to tell us what happened to all this information that they've taken. And one day he was sitting at home. This little child came running up, his grandchild, and said, they're here again. So he saw a government vehicle coming into the into the community. And they said, they're here again, here they're coming. And even the children know this. And so the chief said, here again comes the people who bring a lot of stress in our lives, because they don't only come and pick our brains and take all that information. And every group that comes asks basically the same question. And we're getting tired of answering the same question all the time. But to see any help coming to us in the community, we've never seen anything. This is the reason why we as partners, Conciliation Resources and Transcend Oceania, started thinking about an approach that was going to be a more meaningful for the people in the community as they respond to the impacts of climate change, particularly the conflicts that are exacerbated or the conflicts that are created because of the impacts of climate change. Thus, we worked together to develop this Vanua, Justice Vanua methodology, basically to use what we know is more meaningful for people in terms of the different approaches that we have to deal with the impacts of climate change and particularly the conflicts that are created around that.
In that regard, Paolo, can you just explain for everybody what sorts of conflicts the Vanua methodology has identified, and then what happens once you've done your conflict analysis? I think that would be helpful. I mean, in particular, what sort of specific conflicts are you talking about?
Yeah. So one of the main conflicts that is happening in these communities is this intergenerational understanding of the Vanua and the impacts of climate change on that Vanua. For the younger people, they're more thinking about their future and thinking about moving from the current situation. Whereas the elders in the community, they cannot detach themselves from their Vanua, their land, their totems, and whatever is surround them that is an extension of who they are as indigenous people. So the young people are saying, let's move. The old people are saying, we can't. What about our ancestors who are buried here? What about our land? What happens to our totems? And the totems are animals, they're plants, they're fish. What happens? Do we take them, or how? What are we going to do to deal with this kind of dynamics that are created because of this relocation idea that's becoming very common in these communities? So that's, Kevin, one of the main conflicts that's happening in there. The young people wanting to move because they're thinking about their future, they're thinking about accessing better education, health services, and all that. But for the older people in the community, they're so entrenched in their cultural beliefs and understandings of their relationships with everything that's around them that makes it difficult for them to actually say, yes, we can leave. For them, we will stay. So that's the situation in Vuni Savi Savi. Now, in Vunindongloa, the first fully relocated state-led community in Fiji, they struggled with that for 16 years. They struggled because the young people were saying, you know, we can't continue to live here. We need to leave. And actually, young people had started to leave the community, but the elders in the community, they refused to leave. It was very difficult for them to leave until the government came in and intervened and told them one day, pack up and go. We have the trucks here, the transport, get everything together. We will move you to a new place that was accepted and given by one of the tribes where they're currently settling in, called New Canaan. from the old site to this one here. So that's one of the example of the one of the major conflicts that created out of the impacts of climate change. Another conflict now is we found that in many of these places, because of the sea level rise and the coastal erosion and the inundation of seawater into the land that has destroyed their farms, their homes, their ground, their manure, and everything around them, the issue of food security is a big problem for these people. And so they then work with other communities to give them places and spaces or pieces of land for them to farm on because of food security issues. The problem is these pieces of land that are given to some of these communities on the coast, inland. And for the people of Vunisavisavi, they have to travel. They can only travel on horseback to get to these faraway pieces of land for farming purposes. And it'll take them one whole day to travel there. And once they get there, they will stay in the farm. Now they've built what we call farm houses, and they will stay in the farm for a week or two or three, and then return to the community. Because of the distance that they need to travel and difficult terrains they have to travel to get to the farms, they will spend those many days in the farm before they come back to the community. Now, when they, and these are like young adults. In the community, you would have the older people and the children, the little children. And so when there are obligations, these in Fijian communities, indigenous communities, people have played traditional roles. You're born into a family, you have a traditional role to play for the common good of the community. And when these young people, including men and women, when they move away from the community and are away from the community for 2-3 weeks or even longer, then those roles, they are left vacant in the community. So when there's village meetings and all that, now you have half of the community that's not in the community. They've gone away to their farms for food security purposes. And the same thing with water. All this, the seawater level rise is causing a lot of problems with these people and creating those conflicts. So looking for new water sources. And in some of these places in very dry weather conditions, the water dries out. So where do they go and get the water from? They try and contact the divisional office in Savu Savu, the next neighboring town, to see if the water authority can supply them with water. But then they don't have the trucks, they don't have the tanks and the resources to be able to do that. So that's just a few of the conflicts that we are helping them to address using peace building in these communities up in the northern division. And there's the community, the Navievia community. In 2014, the land on which they settle on belongs to the Anglican Church, the Diocese of Polynesia. And they have been, for more than 100 years, they've lived on this land, they've settled on this land. And there's no black and white agreement about them living on this piece of land. It's just by word of mouth. And so in 2014, the Anglican Diocese of Polynesia actually sold the land surrounding Navievia community to the government of Kiribati for relocation purposes because of the impact of climate change Kiribati is now facing. During that time, the president then was then looking for opportunities for to relocate the people of Kiribati anywhere in the Pacific. And so they found this land in Fiji. And so the Anglican Church actually sold the land without much consultation with the people. So the people were really shocked that one day they came in to say, the land surrounding you, 5,500 acres of land, is now belongs to Kiribati, does not belong to the church anymore. And they are now settling on a piece of land that's only 300 acres and just enough for their community, which is now growing and expanding and to farm around the land that where they're situated at the moment, which is very infertile for farming. So now they're worried if it belongs to, even though they're still kind of planting and using the space, the land that's been sold for farming and all that, they're not really sure what the decision is going to be tomorrow. So they wake up one day and they say, you're not allowed to farm here, to touch the trees and any resources around there. They're not sure. If that happens tomorrow, then where do they go? They are people, because they are settlers, they are not indigenous people, they don't own land. They are not entitled to land ownership. Only the indigenous people of Fiji are landowners. They are the major landowners in Fiji, and very small percentage is owned by the state. And so they live with this conflict every day, not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow as a settler community.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Paolo. Let's talk about the Navia case a little bit more in detail later. But before we do that, I have two more questions. You talked about the discrepancy between the attitudes of the young people and the old people. And so obviously these communities are not homogeneous. There are differences in interests and there are power imbalances. How do you address these power imbalances between young and old, or male and female, in the context of your methodology? This would be my first question. And then the second one, you very often mentioned the term Vanua, and the Vanua term also figures prominently in the title of your methodology. Maybe for our listeners, can you elaborate a little bit more what the Vanua context actually means? And then we can talk about Naviavia in more detail.
Our society in Fiji are very patriarchal. And men hold the power and make decisions always in this country. In the indigenous communities is very, very real. And so women and young people, people who live with disability, minority groups, LGBTQI communities, they would be present in decision-making processes, but they don't actively participate, because in our culture, I talked about traditional roles before. You're born into a family that belongs to a tribe is responsible for a particular role, traditional role in the community. And so with that, we also, in the indigenous understanding, we understand that when the whole community comes together to meet, to make decisions on issues that affect the community and affect the Vanua, there are only members of particular tribes that will talk, that have that role. to talk, and the rest of us will just sit and listen. When it comes to gender, then the women and girls are more disadvantaged. So first of all, if they don't belong to those tribes, then you can't do anything. And then if they are women and girls, then they're further disadvantaged in that situation. And so we understand that as Indigenous people, and we understand that if we are going to do peace building work in the community, we need to bring the community to understand that women have a role. Everybody has a role to play in peace building. Women have a role. Young people have a role. People with disability, all the different groups in the communities do have a role in peace building. And we bring the community together in those consultations, analysis, workshops, inputs for the community to understand that. And so, but even when they begin to understand that, that cultural understanding of who they are, their identity, who they are in the public space particularly, is always a challenge. And therefore, we as an organization working with them in the communities need to understand, how do we create safe spaces where the voices of women are heard, the voices of those people that, you know, are not usually heard within the traditional cultural setting can now be heard. And so what we do is we would divide the groups up into those little groups. So the young people, the women, the men, the older men, the younger men will sit together in those groups, and they have their talanoa running simultaneously around those groups. Before then, we come together as the big group for them to then share that in the big group. And if they still feel they still are not confident to share that in the big group, then one of the facilitators will work with them to actually raise the voices of the different groups in the big group so they're able to hear it. And so we do even do a lot of work around better listening. How do you listen so that you actually understand what people are trying to say, rather than to hold those very strong cultural beliefs and say, oh, they're women, they're not supposed to be talking here. So even though they talk, we won't listen to them. So it's training them to have those better listening skills, communication skills during those times when those dynamics are very strong, so that they're able to actually understand each other.
At our advocacy workshops, where we connect community representatives to government officials, we've been making sure to invite a range of community representatives, so not just the traditional male leaders. So young people, young women, and I think it was very very obvious that this has a very powerful impact, because I remember one of our workshops where a young woman stood up and spoke to the government representative. And, you know, for us in the West, it might seem like a normal thing. Someone is speaking to a government official. But I think, as Paolo has described, in this traditional context, that's quite a rare thing. And it can be quite confronting for a young person, especially a young woman, to do that. And it worked really well. And I think it actually helped to not only for that person, for that young woman, to feel more empowered, but also to serve as an example to others, and also to government officials, to kind of normalize this idea that when they're engaging with communities, it's important to engage with everyone and not just to deal with one representative or one traditional male leader.
Mm. Yeah? So this is another very good example, Volker, about what happens in those communities. Usually, in all indigenous communities, when there is a meeting or there is a workshop or a training or government consultation coming in, people understand their gender roles very well. And so those meetings, those consultations will be filled with men and usually older men. The young boys would be there, but they would be involved in the serving of kava. That's their role. So they pound it, they mix it, they serve it. The older men are the ones who are going to be engaging with whoever comes in to do those consultations and those meetings and all that. And where would the women be? The women would be busy cooking food for all these men who are in the meetings. And so what we've done using the Just Peace Manure methodology is we are aware that this is traditional indigenous to be able to do that, but we approach the chief, we meet with the chief and say, we want to get everybody in, even the women. And so then the question would be, so who's going to be cooking the food? And so then the community talks about how they need to prepare themselves. And so we would, instead of starting very early in the morning, we would schedule like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock start, so that the food is prepared. And then they all come to the meeting, men, women, and youth, all come to the meeting. But then the food is now ready. So when it's time for lunch, the food is now served and everybody participates in it. Huh? So just an example of what we've done to make sure that there's inclusiveness in the decision-making and discussions about issues that affect everybody in the community, including women and young people.
These are very good practical examples about your work. And so you also mentioned that you are involved in comparative learning. So maybe you can talk a little bit about how you share these experiences and what your comparative learning approach is.
Yeah, thank you. Just before I go there, there was something that was mentioned earlier on about the Vanua. So when we talk about Vanua, we are talking about people, we're talking about the land, we're talking about the sea, and we're talking about what's above us. So when we talk about Vanua, we talk about all these things. And you cannot talk about people separate from the land, the sea, and all that, and all the totems that we have and how we are connected, because all these things, they are, as indigenous people, we understand them as an extension of who we are as human beings. So when we engage people, indigenous people in this work, we need to understand that we are not only engaging the people, we are engaging the Vanua.
Can I just say on Vanua, as an outsider, I think this is a really important point to make. When it comes to climate change, I think part of the problem is that in our Western kind of exploitative approach to the environment, of resource extraction, of industry, pollution, that is part of the problem, I think, part of why we're facing this climate change crisis. And what I've learned, having the opportunity to work in the Pacific and understand the culture in Fiji and other cultures in the Pacific, is that the approach to the environment is very different. And to me, part of what the Vanua means is it's this holistic view of everything, of where we live, the environment, plants, nature, other people, relationships. So it's this holistic approach to the environment, I think, that we in the Western world really could learn from. And that could be part of what helps us to manage this crisis and to change how we do things and what's causing climate change. So I just wanted to add that, because to me, that's been a very special learning in this work and in our partnership.
So in terms of comparative learning, one of the things that we try to get our people away from is this whole concept of victimhood, because they are affected by the impacts of climate change. They become the victims. And they become the victims and they become very vulnerable and therefore cannot, in many of our situations in Fiji, they're waiting for people from the outside to bring them help and assistance on how to deal with these things. So we want to, in our peace building work, get people out of that mentality of the victimhood syndrome. For them to begin to understand that we can do some things. There's things that's present in our Vanua that we can actually make use of to respond to the impacts of climate change. And with that, we bring in the communities that are affected by climate change together to talk to each other about what their experiences have been, how is it affecting them, what are the challenges that they are facing, and what are the things that they are doing to actually respond to the challenges. And so when they do that, they feel that they are not alone in this struggle, that there are other communities that face exactly the same things as us, but they have actually done something that we can learn from. So that's the whole idea of bringing the people together, affected, the communities affected by climate change, to actually halano around what's happening and how it's affecting them and what they're doing to respond so that the others can learn, but also together as a big group can then, with a louder voice, reach out to government, to all these development partners about their needs together, working together to address the impacts of climate change.
Thank you, Paolo. So that's thank you, Paolo. You and Alex together, I think, have highlighted many interesting dimensions of your Just Peace Vanua orientation and methodology. What are the main recommendations you have from this work for state institutions, donors, and other CSOs who want to support communities in climate change related conflict transformation and peace building? What are the learnings you've made, and what recommendations have you got for other organizations wanting to work in this space?
That's a very, very big question. Well, I can start off by saying that, firstly, as Paolo has mentioned, inclusion, I think, is crucial. Inclusion for all different levels, from community levels, civil society, international organizations, donors, governments. I think often we've found that problems exist because there's a disconnect between different levels. And also, I think, to question this hierarchy, that there's a high level and a low level, I think this should all just be seen as different parts of the society. I think the key is to make sure that they are connected, that there's good communication, and good understanding of what's needed. And as Paolo said, that everybody has a voice. This is what we've been hearing, that often conflicts arise because either communities are not aware of what's happening or what assistance is available. Government is not aware of what's needed or what communities are experiencing. Donors are not aware of what are the actual needs and what needs to be funded and supported. So I think that's probably one point I'd make. Paolo, any?
Yeah, there's three other things, recommendations I'd like to make. One is for everybody who works in this space and work with the communities to understand that in all these situations, conflict exists. And therefore, as you are working to relocate people or adaptation, whatever you're doing, to make sure that we are conflict sensitive in our approach, that conflict is always there, but always in our approach to help people, how do we also understand that, if people struggle on how to resolve those conflicts, what are the mechanisms that we have in place to actually address those? rather than just focusing on relocation, adaptation, mitigation factors, to understand that conflict exists everywhere. So we have to be conflict sensitive in our approach. Another thing that we need to remember is there's a lot of trauma that people face because of this. Watching the slow onset of the rising sea level on a daily basis. And if you listen to the stories of these people in the communities, there are stories of traumatic experiences that they face. And so how do you make sure that your work in climate change is also trauma-informed, and what you're going to do to be able to address that? The third thing, I think, is we've demonstrated a way that we think works best in these places. So donors, funders, international partners, and local partners must work together. And preferably, many times, that the local partners who understand the how of doing peace building, so that it is meaningful for people in the community, they must be involved in the work locally and supported by our partners from donors, development partners, but it's the local people who understand their context and all that must work with the community, must be given that opportunity to work with the community.
Thank you, Paolo. What are your plans for the future in terms of your collaboration? Are you going to continue working together? And do you have any final words that you'd like to add to this conversation?
Well, Conciliation Resources, we prefer to work in long-term partnerships. So we have had a partnership for many years, and we hope to continue this. I think there's a few sort of projects that have been developing quite well, and we hope to support them. So the Oceania Peacebuilding Institute is one that Paolo can mention. We hope to support to develop that. The Community Advocates Program, which is helping community representatives to become the focal points for working with climate adaptation, relocation, with government, with other stakeholders, because there are many communities that need assistance and there's not enough civil society organizations or government officials. So they need to have the people who will be able to represent their communities. So we found that this is a very sustainable approach. So we hope to support this program. And there's always opportunities arising. And as I said, we hope to work to develop project ideas that will meet current needs and meet the priorities that exist here, but also at the regional level. This is not a localized issue. I think there's a lot of potential in connecting to colleagues all around the Pacific through the Oceania Peacebuilding Institute or other comparative learning, and to help share the learnings and to help people develop this work in other countries. So that's just some thoughts. Paolo, what about
you? Yeah, we're both peace building organizations. So we have all the reasons to be working together in the area of conflict, violence, injustices, and all that as we continue to move forward. I also want to say that we've started some of our work out in the region, and currently starting in the Solomon Islands. And both Conciliation and Resources and us are working together in some of these programs. We explored the opportunity to work together in the Solomon Islands around climate change and peace building. And we did 3 weeks ago, a two-day workshop on that, which was really appreciated, and the people we invited were really interested, from government, from churches, from civil society. They're really interested to continue that conversation. So there's other programs that we plan to run out in the region that we will actually need the support of each other in these programs.
Thanks very much. Volker, do you have any final comments?
Thank you very much, Paolo and Alex. And it was a great conversation to have. Thank you very much.
And from my perspective, once again, thank you for reminding us of the centrality of locality for deep contextual analysis, the centrality of relationships, and for looking at these processes as opportunities for mutual learning rather than top-down didactic applications of external processes and theories. So thank you for reminding us of all of that.